This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com.
Became famous for dumping out secrets concerning the U.S. government and very classified and sensitive documents, is arrested and charged with a plethora of crimes. Hey, everybody, Kate Delaney. That's where we start. It is all about Julian Assange, because it's been a long time where he was holed up in an embassy in London, if you remember. It's been 7 years. So WikiLeaks founder Assange, who has portrayed himself as a champion of free press, is now under the thumb of the U.S. government. The U.S. Department of Justice's decision to charge him with conspiring to hack government computers limits his ability, certainly, to mount a vigorous free speech defense. That's what a lot of legal experts, anyway, are saying. And, you know, you think about this. What's the Attorney General is saying is that Assange put millions of lives at risk all over the world. When the president was asked for his reaction to Assange's arrest, he said, "I know nothing." The U.S. indictment is pretty interesting, I have to say that. And the Assange deal is something that will be watched closely. He was picked up at the Ecuadorian embassy, and the hacking charge really would undercut any free speech defense for Assange that I can imagine. You can remember when he was out there and pumping his fists and as the WikiLeaks founder and the man who was championing free speech, easy for me to say, huh? Is now again under U.S. Charges. And what the charge ultimately means, you know, the indictment of WikiLeaks publications of emails damaging the 2016 Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, etc. British police carried Assange out of the Ecuador's embassy in London on Thursday after his 7-year asylum there was revoked. The U.S. Department of Justice said the 47-year-old was arrested under extradition treaty between the U.S. and Britain. Barry Pollock, a lawyer for Assange, suggested in a statement that the indictment could chill press freedom. He said, "This is damaging. Journalists should be deeply troubled by the unprecedented charges." So, you know, the Justice Department debated for years whether prosecuting Assange and WikiLeaks would encroach on First Amendment protections or not. What do you think? Does this trample on the First Amendment? So the department under President Obama made a conscious decision not to bring charges against him on the grounds that WikiLeaks activities were too similar to what controversial journalists do. Now that's over. So prosecutors are going to emphasize that cracking a passport is far outside the realm of what respectable journalists do. And as the world turns, you know, this is huge, huge news. So no more asylum, extradited from England and facing charges. And there's no question, he's either a hero to some or a treasonous enemy to others. Assange has been that guy from day one when he dumped a lot of secret information, you know, out there. So this is the story that is getting a lot of attention, and not surprisingly, because it should be. It should get a lot of attention. It goes to what we were always talking about, fake news and news that's real and freedom of the press and the kind of, not kind of, but the tricky waters that we navigate already. But he definitely released sensitive documents, and it comes down to that. It comes down to what sticks. I mean, you know, that ultimately is the bottom line. That's the deal. All right, if I was going to pick out a story that affects all of us probably listening to this show, I say probably because I can't 100% claim that every single one of us is affected by it, but it just really feels that way to me. I look around at the cities where I'm traveling to, and including my own city, and you look at infrastructure, and we've talked about that for a long time, money for bridges that look like they're aging and crumbling to the ground, and the Democrats are trying to up to $2 trillion to invest in infrastructure. That will be an interesting battle. The leaders in Congress said on Thursday that they're going to seek Trump support in the coming weeks for that legislation to dump $2 trillion to rebuild that, like I said, cities' infrastructures, roads, bridges, schools, that whole kind of thing. And I'm thinking, if Nancy Pelosi is saying it has to be at least $1 trillion, I'd like to see it closer to $2 trillion. She said there'd be discussions on how such an amount could be financed. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Republican, told reporters that the financing issue was a major obstacle, and he said, "I'm all for taking it up, infrastructure legislation, once the president and Democrats and everybody says, okay, here's how we're going to pay for it. As soon as that magically," and I like what he said, "as soon as that magically appears, I think we have a way forward." And McConnell makes sense here. Where's the way forward? Well, of course we need help with infrastructure. Of course we need to put money into that. But where's that money coming from? And you think of the president, he hasn't gotten any funding for his wall, the arguments over the southern border. I don't know. This could be an interesting, in a way, it could be an interesting sell, because the president wanted, I think at one time he announced the interest for infrastructure, and certainly on this show we've had those discussions. So I think this is, again, another sticky issue. You give me what I want, I give you what you want, and there's no way the Democrats are going to fund that wall 100%. There's just no way. So he's not going to get the ultimate thing that he wants. And what does that mean? Does that mean he backs off of a plan that somebody else puts out there for infrastructure problems? I'm going to say, yeah. I'm going to say that there's a good chance that happens. It makes sense to me, for sure. All right, in the meantime, no surprise, Jesse Smollett has been smacked with a lawsuit, and of course the city of Chicago is furious about what happened there, and they say that that this is wrong and a miscarriage of justice, that Smollett is not being charged for anything that he's done. He's out, and the lawsuit says he misled cops by describing white attackers. Watch for this case, because it could be precedent setting, if you know what I mean. Could be is the word there. Not that it will be, but it could be. All right, just for grins, I'm going to throw this in. I was talking to somebody about space today that used to work at NASA, and was glowing about some of the work they did. And I happened to see the SpaceX launched a mega rocket. I can't talk. Mega rocket. Easy for me to say. Once again, mega rocket. And it's its second supersized rocket from Florida, a year after sending up a sports car on the initial test flight. So here we go again. Elon Musk has like no boundaries. He just goes for it. And one way you got to really admire that. All right, stay with us, everyone.
It's been said, any society is only 3 missed meals away from chaos. Those times may be near. Think about it. Our country faces multiple terrorist threats and aggressions from Russia and North Korea. Social unrest and violent marches yet again may lead to looting of stores and city shutdowns. And a crumbling infrastructure leaves our power grid vulnerable to long-term outages from a single cyber attack. When the chaos from any one of these threats arises, the government knows it can't provide during a widespread national emergency. That's why you need your own plan for self-reliance. That's where My Patriot Supply comes in. Get a four-week survival food supply for only $99. That includes breakfast, lunches, and dinners. Order online at preparewithgcn.com. $99 for 4 weeks of survival food that tastes like homemade cooking and lasts up to 25 years from My Patriot Supply. Get your kits today at preparewithgcn.com. Free shipping is included. Preparewithgcn.com.
Stocks and options trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors.
Hey guys, it's Scott Bauer here, CEO of Prosper Trading Academy. Are you looking for a super hot stock tip? Here at Prosper, we are always looking for exciting opportunities in the markets. And right now, all my students are salivating over the stock we are watching. In fact, I've got this hot stock written down right here, and I'm about to text it to you for free. I just need to know where to send it. Simply text HOT to 48542, and I'll text it to you instantly. How do I know this stock is so hot? Well, I'm a former CBOE market maker for Amazon Options, former vice president of Goldman Sachs, and I have over 25 years of professional trading experience. I'm telling you, this stock is hot. But be warned, the stock may move soon, so you need to claim it before it does. Text HOT to 48542, and I'll text you this hot stock instantly. Text HOT to 48542, and I'll text you this hot stock instantly. Message and data rates may apply.
It's time to start drinking Tahibo Tea. Tahibo Tea comes from the inner bark of the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. The Tahibo tree never gets sick, never gets infected, and never gets infested. As a result, it contains antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. Tahibo Tea can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening condition due to infection, diabetes, or cancer. Every week, someone calls in with the story of another miraculous recovery. Order your Tahibo Tea now for only $34.95 per pound plus shipping. 1 pound makes 300 servings, which is only 12 cents per cup. Call today, 818-883-7222. Again, 818-883-7222, or buy online at drinksupertea.com. That's drinksupertea.com. All orders ship the same day. Call now, 818-883-7222, or buy online at drinksupertea.com.
Wow, having just spoken to Bill Catlett, Chairman, Board of Directors, National Foundation for Transplants, and hearing his passion and talking about people getting transplants in the U.S. and now what's happening, we are so pleased to be joined by Eric Buchanan, and he's a transplant patient. Eric, thanks for spending some time with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Let's start with, tell us about your transplant experience. What organ did you receive and what happened that led you up to needing that organ?
So I received a double lung transplant in 2014. The need for it was because of my diagnosis of cystic fibrosis. And just like every cystic fibrosis person, they will eventually need a transplant because there's no cure for CF at the time.
And so how long were you sick, and then how long was the wait for an organ?
So I was diagnosed when I was 9 years old, but didn't really have any kind of complication or hospitalization until I think I was around 22 years old. And then even then it was tolerable. I was able to graduate from the University of Florida, and I worked for Publix for a while. And then in 2010, my lung collapsed. And I was forced to go into a disability and move in with my parents up in the Charlotte area. So from 2010 to basically 2014, I was sick, but I was just barely not sick enough to get on the transplant list. But once I was on the list, you know, it still took about a year and a half. So.
And what was that like, that period of waiting? Because one of the things we were talking with Bill Catlett about, he's the chairman of the board of directors of the National Foundation for Transplants. It's at transplants.org, by the way. One of the things we were talking with him about is the fact that there are organs out there. There's just not enough people who have actually said before they passed that they would donate their organs. Really tell us, what was that year and a half wait like for you? Because what you were really waiting for was, among others, other things. Yes, a match, but also just someone being willing to give up an organ they were no longer going to use.
Yes, it's a tough process. They do pretty well. Well, at least UNC in Chapel Hill, where I was transplanted, they do pretty well to prepare you letting you know that it's going to be tough. There's going to be ups and downs. You know, just one point in my life, I couldn't take a shower without oxygen, and I was on oxygen 24/7 for about 3 years, I would say. Mm. And then it was just, you sit there on the list and you hope and you hope and you hope. But then there's another side of you that thinks, you know, man, I'm waiting for somebody to actually die. You know, somebody's child that, you know, or adult even that just died. And I'm thinking of happiness and glory because it's a new life for me. But, it is weird kind of thinking about, people dying in order to give you organs. And then the fact that, you know, that some people are organ donors, but their family at the time can overturn it. It's just one of those. I just hope they go to the right person that can respect and, fully understand the present they were given, the gift they were given.
Yeah, and what a gift, Eric, when you think about that and you think about what we're talking about here with organ donation, did you ever think you would get this lucky? I mean, there is luck involved in this and matching it and making it happen. Did you, at such a young age, to be dealing with what you dealt with, did you ever anticipate this?
I never anticipated not getting an organ. I figured I was at the age of 33 at the time, so I knew I had at least another year left, but that was still, you know, a long time to be on the transplant list. I didn't have any kind of weird antibodies to reject or to match up with the organ. And, you know, I was getting calls at first, I got three calls in 1 month and then another one later on down the road. And then finally I got my call, but they were coming in. So that was inspirational. But my mom also had a lung transplant, and she had hers at Duke actually at the age of, let's say 55. Yeah. So around the same time, but I was more scared for her because she had just a couple limited things that they had to match up, and, you know, it was not likely for her to get one, but it seemed like it was very likely for me to get one. So I never thought that I wouldn't get one. I was always positive about my experience no matter what.
We're talking with Eric Buchanan. He's a double lung transplant patient. He had the double lung transplant in 2014. We just did an interview earlier with Bill Catlett. He's the chairman of the board of directors of the National Foundation for Transplants. By the way, you and your family can go to transplants.org and sign up to be organ donors. We encourage you to do that during the holiday season and tell your family and get them to do it too. You know, Eric is the living, walking, breathing embodiment of somebody making that incredible gift. Eric, when you, I don't know how this process works. You do. You went through it. But I can imagine there's this point where you know today's the day. This transplant is going to happen. And I want to hear from you. What was it like for you when you, following the surgery, what happened when you woke up?
Yeah, so I had a apartment close to Chapel Hill because, like I mentioned earlier, my parents lived in the Charlotte area. And so it was about 3 hours, maybe 2.5 hours to Charlotte from Chapel Hill. And I got an apartment because I was getting all kinds of calls I guess it was June. So July 4th weekend, I packed up and moved to the apartment so I could be closer. Excuse me. So it wasn't so devastating for me to hear a no and then have to travel, you know, 3 hours, 2.5 hours back. So, you know, we anticipated it eventually, but then we didn't get another call. I didn't get another call until November. So I was like, oh, well, you know, I kind of jumped the gun. And then I guess I got a little scared at that point that it might not happen, but I never let it enter my brain, I don't think, because I was very positive about it. But when I did get the final call, I was actually back in Charlotte on Christmas Eve celebrating Christmas with my parents. So
oh my gosh.
At seven in the morning on Christmas Eve, 2014, I got a call from the lung transplant coordinator, and he says, "Eric, we have an organ that looks really good, and we need you to come up and, you know, ASAP." And I said, "Okay, wow." Before that, they didn't, you know, they said, you know, pack your bags and blah blah blah, and you know, come on up here. And I'd wait in the ER for a while, but as soon as I got there, I just had this feeling because all my family was in town, and at that point, I just kind of felt like this was different. This was it, you know. So I'm driving up to UNC and thinking about it the whole time, and thinking this is what's planned. This is going to happen. And then everybody was showing up kind of late after I got there, and they immediately got me up to the OR prep area and just signing waivers and. You know, and then at that point, you know, my mom and everybody got there, and I think they felt it too. So they took my oxygen off and had me walk into the OR, which I thought was a little unorthodox. And I had never gotten through the operating room doors. I was on the cusp of it always, but not in the OR. So I walked to the OR, and they started setting things up, and I was just, yeah, I knew that was it. You know, I knew that there was no way that they were going to get me that far and say, no, it's not looking good. But they could have, but they didn't. So everything worked out great. And as far as waking up right after transplant, you know, you're still groggy from the drugs and supposed to be in a lot of pain, but they keep that well monitored and under control. So I remember waking up, and they took out the trach right away. And I remember just feeling low on oxygen, just freaking out because I didn't have a nasal cannula for oxygen to come in. And that was like a childhood blanket to me. You know, it was very important that I had that all the time. But I could fully breathe. I just had to expand my lungs more because they had been, you know, kind of closed down for a while. So, but it was definitely surreal being able to walk with. You know, without oxygen. And there's actually, I have it recorded on a YouTube video, so of my first walk, and it was less than 24 hours of surgery. So it was, and then
that's incredible.
I still feel these, yes, ma'am, it was amazing. So I still feel these moments where if I climb to the top of a mountain and, you know, in Boone or somewhere and just, you know, or run, or I started playing ice hockey again. It's just in that moment is when, you know, you think, holy cow, this is happening. I haven't done this since, you know. And those are the moments that you realize the gift you have, I think. So.
Yeah. What a perfect place to end this. Eric Buchanan, thank you so much. Double lung recipient. Wow. Amazing story. Thank you. We appreciate you coming on.
Oh, no problem. Thank you, guys.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
If you talk, your name will hear you.
Why are we getting killed like this?
Kyle's not here. Got caught drinking beer in the park a couple of nights ago.
Really?
Yeah. Zero tolerance. He's out for the season.
Harsh.
Hey, he knew not to drink. We made that clear to all of our kids, right?
No, not really.
Bill, if we don't tell them what we expect and why they shouldn't drink, how are they going to know?
Talk. They hear you.
Hear you. You can do it if you try.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
A deadly storm system that has spawned tornadoes and gale force winds has created havoc in four states and is heading toward the east. USA Radio's Rick Vincent has more.
The severe weather hitting the south destroyed the home of Brian and Chandra Verdell in Texas.
I was just coming up, and I was praying, and then a big board back there in the backyard, like, shielded me.
I heard my husband jump on a trailer, and he was like, where are you? And I'm like, I'm buried up under all this stuff.
The storm is now heading for the southeast. National Weather Service meteorologist Bob Orovec is tracking its path.
Currently, there's a threat today of severe weather across a large part of the eastern United States. We have currently a frontal boundary pressing eastward, and there's a lot of active thunderstorms stretching from the Florida Panhandle up into the upstate of South Carolina and western North Carolina.
This is USA Radio News.
Hamilton was adopted from a rescue in 2008. He really likes to be around people. I get out my mat, and I'm doing a downward dog, and he's underneath. He's quite the pug about town. He gets invited to a lot of parties. He knows he's a pretty big deal. Look at this little face. How do you not love him?
Hamilton the Pug, Instagram star, and shelter pet. Amazing adoption stories start in shelters. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now, before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Ken McCarver on the show. The book is called The Sabbath, A Journey of Discovery. And boy, we could probably fill up 4 hours talking about this, but let's not waste any of our precious minutes. Let's get right to Ken. Ken, the book really encompasses so much, as I said, and you can tell it is a personal journey. There's no doubt about that. What was it that drew you to putting the book together? What made you want to write this?
Well, it was a personal endeavor. You know, there's been so much controversy about this, but at the same time, for the majority of believers, it's been settled in their mind for, you know, 1900 years that it's, you know, it's not what the scripture had said it was. You know, it's been changed. It's been perceived in different levels. And for me, I had to know what's right here. You know, what's truth? And I went searching, and what I found, it actually kind of shocked me, kind of scared me at the same time, because I realized the way I'd been taught, the way I had been shown through my walk of faith was, it just wasn't lining up with Scripture. And so that's the beginning of it.
Yeah, and you say not lining up with Scripture. It's so interesting because you tackled these really, as you say, these huge, huge areas that have been written about for so long and are compelling and go against what some people know or believe are the doctrines and the teaching of men that are right there in front of their face. But you really peel down the layers of the doctrines and the teaching and what contemporary Christianity, I guess is a good way to say it, is. And what did you find of
of everything that you came across, what was the most surprising to you?
The resurrection. And the facts about it. You know, the timeline, the actual date of it, you know, it's pretty involved. You know, I've included a chart to walk, you know, and try to put this together in a manner to where I could take the reader by the hand and walk them through this so that they could see it. Trying not to keep it from getting too involved, but at the same time, being able to, like you say, peel back, you know, and reveal, you know, deception. Most people will say, yeah, there's deception, there's corruption in the church and stuff, but I don't think they realize how deep it is, how long it's been involved. It goes right back to the conception of the church in the first century. You know, there was opposing forces that got right in there and just tried to alter it and change it. And we know where that's from, but, you know, truth has to prevail. It has to.
And when you came through the end of the journey, did you feel good about it? Did you feel like you really set out to do what you wanted to do?
I did. Yes. You know, I set out to reach a point in my own mind that, okay, this is what I can settle on. This is what I can receive, you know. And I reached that point. In fact, I went past that point. I remember a point of just telling my wife after I'd gone through my piling of notes and research and sharing it with her and telling her, you know, other people need to see this. This can't be just for me. This people need to see the reality of this. It's not being taught. I was not being shown this. I was not being led to this. And, you know, throughout my Christian walk, I'd always felt there was more to it. There was more depth there, but I was not being led to it. It was not being revealed to me. So, you know, I took off on my own. And, you know, we should be doing that anyway. We should be feeding ourselves as well.
Yeah, do you feel like that? It's like you say, kind of we're getting the Cliff Notes version. And when you go deeper, do you feel like that deepens your faith?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. You know, when you know God's truth, when you see it, it just keeps taking you deeper and deeper, the draw. The more time we spend with him in his word, the deeper he pulls us in, draws us in. He beckons us to come deeper with him.
Yeah. Wow. And as you started from the beginning of the journey to the end of the journey and pulling it all together, how long did that take you?
A little over 14 months.
Wow. And that's still pretty good.
Well, yeah. It was a lot of research, a lot of digging, and a lot of just revealing.
What do you think?
Exciting.
It sounds pretty exciting. What do you think the biggest, or what do you hope the biggest takeaway is, I guess, for the people who read your book?
Well, you know, I hope people will receive truth. You know, a lot of times it comes against everything they've been taught, and, you know, what's the term? Cognitive dissonance. You know, that mental stress we come up against when, you know, we're facing anything that opposes our doctrines, our faith, our belief, anything like that. It's hard to overcome it. And one thing that I've realized is one of the hardest things for, especially for believers, is to overcome tradition. You know, tradition is quite an anchor, but it has to be overcome. Truth, again, has to prevail. And, I guess my biggest hope for everything is that people will want to know more. They'll want to draw closer, go deeper, know the truth, get past. You know, the Apostle Paul told us to be like the Bereans. He called them more noble. That they would, you know, eagerly listen to what he had to say, but they would go and verify what he was saying with Scripture. And I think we should all be doing that.
Wow. Such a positive thought for so many that are probably in some cases wondering. You know, we with what's going on in the world, there are a lot of people that are questioning their faith. There are a lot of people that are questioning religion, as you know, probably more than in any other modern time, don't you think?
I do. And, you know, I think, excuse me, I believe that we live in that era where, as the prophet Daniel was told that in the latter days the books would be open. And, you know, we were also told told, too, that in the end times, that knowledge will greatly increase. Now, we've seen that in science and aerospace, you know, all sorts of different aspects, but I believe the main crux of the whole thing is the reality, the truth, the mysteries of Scripture are being revealed to us now, and we have a choice. You know, we can either pay attention to it or not. And there's a calling going out now, and I think people need to be aware and attentive, and they should answer that.
And we're speaking with Ken McCarver. The name of the book is The Sabbath, A Journey of Discovery. I think it's one of the things that you talk about that's so compelling is you look at the history of Sunday worship. And I've had so many of these conversations with my friends and from different faiths, and some who are agnostics, some who are atheists, some who are from different slivers of Christianity. And what did you find in the history of Sunday worship?
Well, Constantine, you know, he back in what was it, the Council of Nicaea, 325, somewhere in that era.
Yeah, yeah.
He put a twist on things, and, you know, there's been other factions since then that have, you know, added their little two cents to bring us to the point to where we are today. And when you get into Scripture, you realize where we are today doesn't necessarily line up. Now, if you go back, Christ came and he set up one church. And recently I've been told that we have as many as over 2,000 different denominations in America alone. What happened?
Wow.
See what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, wow. Yeah, and boy, that shows you, again, man, word, discovery, exploration. I mean, and you're a serious student of the Bible, definitely, and you call yourself that. But this was a different journey, and we talked about this in the beginning and bringing it around. You say it's really strengthened your faith.
Yes.
And do you hope that as, and again, along the lines of people reading it, do you hope that people go on their own journey?
That's exactly it. You know, if this will jumpstart individuals to want to go deep, you know, when you look at just this one aspect, the Sabbath, and you see the differences, you see the deception, you see the corruption and the change, then you have to ask yourself, what else? Is there anything else? For me, I had to know. And I'm still, this is going to be a lifelong journey. This is not something that we accomplish in any particular given time. It's a life of growth.
I like that, a life of growth. On that note, one last one. Ken, what was the reaction of your family to your undertaking and your book?
Well, it was receptive on some hands and rejected on the others. But again, you know, it goes against tradition. It goes against what people have been taught. It, you know, it's produced some frowns, some raised eyebrows, and some applause. But, you know, you have to enter anything, this like anything else. You have to leave your denominational viewpoints at the door and just pay attention to what, you know, is the Scripture truly truth? You know, can we accept that as our foundation? And if we can say yes to that, then we have to step back and enter this with an open mind and let's just go with what God told us.
Wow, what a perfect way to end this. Leave your denominations at the door. Wow. Ken McCarver, The Sabbath, The Journey of Discovery. You can pick it up, Amazon, etc. Good luck with the book, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kate.
It's time to join the Tahibo Tea Club. Tahibo tea comes from the inner bark of the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. The Tehebo tree never gets sick, never gets infected, and never gets infested. As a result, it contains antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. Tehebo tea can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening condition due to infection, diabetes, or cancer. Tehebo tea is available for only $34.95 per pound plus shipping. 1 pound makes 300 servings, which is only 12 cents per cup. Dial 818-883-7222 or buy online at drinksupertea.com. All orders ship immediately the same day. Call now, 818-883-7222. That number again, 818-883-7222. Or buy online at drinksupertea.com.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
The sound of the earth awake, the rhythm that you make, I'm making my head shake.
Boy, anytime I can talk about music, and anytime I can talk about music that was some of the great music, I'm all about it here on this show, as many of you know. Really pleased to be joined by Christopher Hill. He's written a book about rock and roll music in lots of different very famous publications, including Record Magazine, Spin, Downbeat, Deep Roots Magazine. I could go through everything, and it would take up this entire interview, so I don't want to do that. But he's also written a book called Into the Mystic, The Visionary and Ecstatic Roots of the 1960s Rock and Roll. Christopher, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me.
What is it about the 60s? I love the title, Into the Mystic. You know, when I think of mystic and I think of 60s, they kind of go together, especially music-wise, because there was a huge transition then, right? A big transformation when it comes to music at that time period.
Yeah, there was. And the word mystic is, of course, appropriate to it, because for a while there, between, you know, some point in the early 60s and the end of the decade, many of these bands kind of moved away from the sort of basic rhythm and blues or soul music that they had been interested in playing before and began to get a little weird. And they began to experiment with different types of instrumentation, different types of ideas, and they began to think about different states of consciousness, you know, because they were, among other things they were experimenting with, psychedelic drugs at the time, too. So a lot of the sound and the subject matter became a lot more varied, a lot more interesting, And a lot of it had to do with the kind of concerns that people would call mystical or spiritual.
Absolutely. I'll tell you what felt really like I was in the middle of the 60s is the first time I went to Haight-Ashbury, and you talk about it in your book, The Acid Culture and the Culture of Hate. Of course, the Dead were probably the most famous, and you say this in your book, the most famous proponents, and gave the heirs of their mainline Protestantism an injection of inferiority like they hadn't had since the Romantic era. Wow, explain that. I love the way you put that.
Well, what I mean is that starting in the Haight-Ashbury district in California and in other neighborhoods, you know, urban neighborhoods around the world that were kind of similar to it, they began to experiment with different states of consciousness. Once again, a lot of this via the help that they got from psychedelic drugs like LSD and smoking a lot of marijuana. But what happened is that this idea of there being other states of consciousness other than the ordinary day-to-day normal one that we all use to get through the day, this became an idea that spread even without the use of these substances. People across America and really across the world began to be intrigued with the idea that there were many, many modes of consciousness and many perceptions that were blocked off to them in their ordinary daily consciousness. And I think that's the message that was the culture of the hate that I refer to. And I think that became sort of, I think that did affect sort of the consciousness of the whole world in a way.
So do you think that because of the nature of some of the music, like the Dead's the great example, is that why there's this nostalgia always to harken back to it, even for some younger people who aren't aware of some of the deep roots of what went on in the 60s and again, that transformation? I think there's an interest there. We're seeing college courses on it, et cetera. Do you think that's why?
Yeah, anybody who maybe just old enough to have experienced a bit of this firsthand will typically have the experience of a younger person saying to them something like, boy, I was born too late, or I wish I had been born back then. And, you know, granted, looking back, it all looks like sort of one huge party, which in a sense it was. But it was also, like I said, there was also some really serious thought about, you know, what's the nature of human consciousness and can we work with it in a way that would just tend to make more people more fulfilled and more happy. And the Dead certainly had that ethos. You know, that was the point of what they were doing. You know, they started out being sort of the house band for Ken Kesey's Acid Tests back in like 65 and 66. But eventually they came into their own. And the story of their following of the Deadheads is, you know, that's when you talk about younger people who probably weren't there the first time around who want to participate somehow in the mystique of that era, the Deadheads are probably the classical case.
Boy, yeah, isn't that the truth? If you were to even compare a group today or a sound today, is there anyone that equals that you can think of off the top of your head?
Well, I'll tell you, I'll give a plug for a band I really like. The band that gives me the most pleasure of anyone making music right now is a band from the north of England, from Yorkshire, called Trembling Bells. Mm. And I recommend you all to go on YouTube and check it out, especially a song called Just as the Rainbow. Boy, I tell you, I get the same kind of chills from that you can get from like hearing Gracie Slick with the Jefferson Airplane. They have a wonderful female lead singer with a very big, powerful voice, and it's a little bit folk rocky, and it draws a little bit on English and Celtic stuff, but it's
I find it very accessible, and it rocks. And I would like to see more people enjoy their music.
Boy, no kidding. I love that sentiment. What was it like for you pulling this all together? Because it seems like, in reading it, it feels like it's so your passion. Was it hard to pull this all together? I mean, you're a prolific writer, but in trying to take this kind of a theme and really nail it, which I think you did, how tough was that?
Well, it just kind of, you know, you say pulling it all together, it kind of fell together in a way that felt kind of natural, and which confirmed me in my hope that I was on to a true theme, a true topic here. Of course, I've been listening to this music most all of my life, so you could say the research went on for many decades. But as I started writing it, I had sort of an inkling of an idea what this was going to be about. But you often find, as you're working on something, as you're writing on something, that you really only find out what it's about after you've been writing for a while. And that definitely emerged from this, and I think I managed to find a theme that sort of runs through all of these very, very different kinds of musicians.
Yeah, and as somebody who lived through that, what was that like?
Well, it was great. I mean, I didn't run off to the hate or anything like that. You know, I was just out there in the Chicago suburbs, you know, in middle America. But you really, the one of the fun things at the time was that you really felt like with each new album that came out from any of these musicians, any of your favorite musicians, that you were really getting sort of like a message from headquarters about what was happening in the country and various responses you might have to it. It's kind of like, you know, the French Resistance before D-Day picking up these secret messages on the radio telling them to go blow up the railroad tracks and things like that. But anyway, it was that was lots of fun because it had sort of the fun of being in a secret society. And then the importance we accorded to that music was, you know, as high as we could have, as we could have accorded to any kind of art form, any novels or movies or anything like that. It was really when a new Stones album came out, that was, you know, that was the big deal at the moment, and everybody would be listening to it, and every party you went to would be playing it.
Oh, I love it. Perfect place to end this. Pick up the book, Christopher Hill, Good Stuff, Into the Mystic. Love it. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
It's time to start drinking Tahibo tea. Tahibo tea comes from the inner bark of the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. The Tahibo tree never gets sick, never gets infected, and never gets infested. As a result, it contains antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. Tahibo tea can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening condition due to infection, diabetes, or cancer. Every week, someone calls in with a story of another miraculous recovery. Order your Tahibo tea now for only $34.95 per pound plus shipping. 1 pound makes 300 servings, which is only 12 cents per cup. Call today, 818-883-7222. Again, 818-883-7222, or buy online at drinksupertea.com. That's drinksupertea.com. All orders ship the same day. Call now, 818-883-7222, or buy online at drinksupertea.com.